Did you ever seriously consider what happens with your time in the world of cars, planes, and super-efficient computers that are about to be plugged into our brains? Shouldn't we have more free time? And yet, it seems the opposite is true. People today are ever more isolated, lonely, exhausted, and also busy, tired, and frustrated. The time of the person of today is slashed into awkward, overlapping blocks, where we try to maximize our efficiency and yet achieve nothing at the same time. Our time is eroding. It runs through our fingers and gets turned into exhaustion and doom scrolling. And this erosion doesn't only affect us, it also affects the world around us. Exhaustion and lack of functional time to be spent on families, friendships, communities, and organizations outside of work is affecting the whole fabric of society. Yet, paradoxically, no matter how tired or busy we get, we certainly find enough time to stare at the screens, as if TikTok is defying the whole space-time continuum. And while the media we consume by itself is also questionable, Hollywood-stamped sequels to prequels, slop, AI-generated entertainment, low-quality reality TV shows, and brain rot, perhaps the most regressive form of media consumption. There is certainly a link between our free time, the rise of questionable entertainment, and the wider state of decay of society. Yet the three are rarely discussed together. Rather, we prefer to concentrate on each aspect separately. Lack of personal time is viewed as a flaw in your personal efficiency. Self-help books and productivity gurus advise us on how to work two minimum-paying jobs, exercise, develop our own small business, and be happy. The frailing of social fabric is attributed to the rise of social media and, more broadly, to capitalism that powers it. A cursed economic system that gifted us such miracles as car-centered infrastructure, gig economy, and Mr. Beast videos. And decaying state of social institutions is attributed to the rise of neoliberalism. We blame faceless corporations without holding anyone accountable, with rare exceptions. But something connects our problems, and it is us, or more specifically, our time.
Let's say thank you for making it happen. Thank you.
In his work, How Will Capitalism End?, Wolfgang Strieg highlights the paradoxical rise of screen time in the face of a multi-level crisis that affects our communities and lives. Multi-crisis is just like multivitamins, except it's bad for you and is administered without your consent. He suggests that the collapse of social institutions and lack of economic prospects leads people to rely more heavily on addictive behaviors so we can dissociate from the painful reality into funny cat videos. The addictive behaviors, in turn, beat up chilled corpse of already dead community and take us further and further away from any form of social organizing that would be required to address large-scale social issues or just make the world around us suck less. He suggests that hoping, doping, and shopping are coping mechanisms that help us deal with the fracturing reality of environmental disasters, lowering standards of living, and rising economic and political polarization. We indulge in social media while politicians everywhere beg us not to check what's in the freezer downstairs. For if we stop watching TikToks, we may realize that modern states are merely the shells for corporate profit extraction for about 3,000 people at the top, and that the planet slowly but surely is running out of livable space. Really, seriously, the only new idea of rejuvenation for a dying capitalist system is a proposal to reduce the global economy to a bunch of super capitalist city-states ruled by technomonarchy and surrounded by, I assume, some sort of wasteland for plebs like myself. Anyhow, Strieg introduces the idea of post-capitalist post-society. A state of modernity that is characterized by the decay of social institutions, governments, and economies, combined with individual automation and isolation that, among other things, turns our personal time into screen time as a cope. And there is a lot to be said about the atomization of man and the decay of modern institutions. Both are often attributed to 70s neoliberal economic policies that prioritize sharp individualist greed over communal good. I guess it is never too late or too early to shit on Hayek and Friedman in a leftist video essay, so I'm glad we got that out of the way. But the problem, unfortunately, runs quite a bit deeper than neoliberalism or phone bad. Actually, YouTube and other forms of media are cursed with individualism due to their mechanisms of work. Algorithms' primary function is to tailor entertainment specifically and personally to you, in the hope of providing the best entertainment that, in return, maximizes profits for Neil and kills any sense of culture because none of the things that we watch inform any broader cultural landscape of our communities. We have nothing to talk about with the people that surround us, no common ground, and more often choose to build parasocial relationship with two-dimensional models of internet micro-celebrities at an expense of real-life interactions. And well, let's return back to the question of which black hole sucked all of our free time for a brief second. In his work, Time Energy, Why You Got No Time or Energy, David McCarracher introduces the concept of time energy, spelled as one merged word, by the way. Time energy stands to cover the conjoint nature of our time and our energy as we experience them together. David uses time energy to describe the obvious problem that we all experience but have a problem putting into words. That despite occasionally having free time, we do not have the energy to occupy that time with anything that is meaningful. Because whenever we get free time, we got no energy. Whenever you have no time for yourself, it doesn't matter if you have energy. Or if you have no energy, it doesn't matter that you have time. You might as well spend it on skibbity toilet memes. But wait, some may say, isn't time energy just a scheduling problem? What if you wake up at 5 a.m., take a cold shower, and run to your McDonald's job like a top trader from Wall Street? Isn't that a solution? Well, the whole self-help industry is driven by a misunderstanding that our time is not just time, it is time energy. The only thing that self-help gets right is the understanding that rotting away on the couch doing nothing but watching TV is not really a rest, nor is it a good way to live your life. But scheduling enthusiasts rarely interest themselves in the underlying reasons of why people choose to waste their time away. Instead, they assign all responsibility to the individual, as all dark roads of modernity inevitably lead to individualism. Ironically, that is also why motivational channels and self-help books can continue to flourish. No amount of self-help literature or advice around productivity can achieve a sufficient increase in productivity, because they fail to understand the limited availability of time energy in the life of a working person. No matter how you spend your time and energy, both remain limited resources that need to be linked to each other to produce anything of value. Consuming self-help can become a form of self-loathing that occupies your eroded time. It is a type of consumption that is only different from watching TikTok as much as it makes you feel good about yourselves. But otherwise, no amount of self-help, scheduling, or exercise will give you back your time energy. Instead, what we get is what David calls shit time. The time to do nothing. The time to watch TV while your kid is playing on an iPad. Shit time is an intuitive concept, but if you clicked on this video in search of an explanation of what is happening with your time, this is it. You have no time energy. You have shit time instead. A high degree of social and economic stress takes a toll on everybody, and perhaps the rise of global economic productivity did not come without a decrease in personal time and energy. But what do I know? I am just a YouTuber who knows the way around academic paywalls. Time energy also has a strong link to wealth. It is not surprising that those better of us financially have always enjoyed more time than the working people. Older monarchs, as much as modern capital holders, have been able to free up their time energy by outsourcing various activities to lower-class workers. Monetization of time is inevitably linked to the quality of time, but also to the commodification of your time, because under capitalism, time is literally money. You can't buy happiness, but you can buy free time. As Moish Postone writes in his work, Time, Labor, and Social Domination, if labor is our general measure of productivity, time becomes a necessity. We can't see labor as the only source of capital and value any longer because we, ourselves, and our time become absorbed into the system. Value is not related to labor productivity, but to time itself. There I fancy myself and add here that by extrapolation, your attention is as valuable as your labor now. Because just like productivity, your attention is also directly dependent on your time. With the rise of attention economy, the topic of attention extraction and various pathological ways of media consumption, such as brain rot, become essential. Attention theft is not much different from wage theft. Those in higher economic status are now aiming to extract both your wealth and your attention, as both are ways to generate profit from others' time. Beyond largely misplaced arguments about kids these days and toilet humor, brain rot is not just the type of highly stimulating content, but a mode of media consumption that constantly maximizes dopamine release in the brain. The defining characteristic of brain rot, its real threat, is not what is shown on the screen, but the relationship of the brain rot content to our time. Brain rot, or for boomers, doom scroll and other types of media consumption that are used to stimulate the brain, usually include fast-paced scrolling through media sources, from one to the next. Consumption of media that is stimulating in one way or another through sounds and colors, and often consumption of media through multiple screens. God gave you two eyes and two ears so you can watch this video while playing video games. And like all forms of media consumed through mainstream platforms, brain rot is generating profit for the owners of the platforms, converting your time energy, just as well as your shit time, into profit. On one hand, the amount of functional time constantly decreases, and the dysfunctional time is absorbed by online media or social networks that exploit addictive strategies to maximize your attention. Perhaps absorbing time that should be spent on something interesting or productive. Not surprisingly, since everyone is either too tired or too distracted to care, the social fabric of society and non-capitalist organizations and social institutions are now largely dead. As a result, we devolve to the use of commercial services and online profiles to replace community and self as a substitute for real-life organizations that have been decomposing for the last 30 years. A great example is, of course, replacement of social activism with online activism. Campaigns like Blackout Tuesday or All Eyes on Rafah are still imprinted in the memory of the internet. This type of activism, to me, is a symbol of lacking time energy in people of today, as well as a testament to powerlessness of modern social organizations. While social media posting does raise awareness on the issue, it doesn't do anything except increasing awareness. Those campaigns allow participants to feel good about themselves without actually doing anything other than that what they are already doing, that is, scrolling through social media. And while as far as any form of social or communal engagement is replaced by social media posting or media consumption, things will remain as they are or will deteriorate further. Let me be clear here. The slogan, it gets worse before it gets better, is only valid if there are people who are working to improve things. Nothing ever gets better by itself. The erosion of time can also be perceived through the decay of non-commercialized social resources and spaces. Money is increasingly required to see other people in real life, with everything from sports to dates being paywalled through apps and service platforms, while social media and other online services, including YouTube, remain free. So parasocial relationships that are paid indirectly through advertiser revenue become the only form of social connection that doesn't require a credit card. You may object and say, wait, Anna, aren't you, that is, me, interested in others actually watching the videos I make? Am I not contradicting myself? Well, I don't think so. I also want people who watch my channel to go out, do things in real life, get involved in social organizing, find friends and partners, live fulfilling lives, and not to reduce their lives to the alteration of work and doom scrolling. If that means that you'll become so motivated right now that you'll shut the video down and throw your phone into the river, I'll be happy for you. Meanwhile, someone rotting away in front of their screen for hours on end at the expense of their well-being and social engagements is not only fine, but actually desirable by social media platforms like YouTube. With our time energy reduced to shit time and social relations replaced by parasocial ones, we more often choose to lock up in our little spaces, isolated, yet continuously agonizing about the state of the world outside. Overall, due to people's absenteeism from society or formation of post-society, if you want to be all fancy with the vocabulary, the function of society gets transferred to for-profit corporations where all forms of social connections and support are bought and sold. Meaning that in case of any adversity, people have to either hope to buy their solutions or beg detached professional political class for help. Since the community is dead and society consists of social media avatars rather than people, complete individualization accompanies our loss of time. You personally are responsible for properly sorting your recyclable containers and boycotting all pro-Israel corporations so that you single-handedly save humanity and the planet. Even work is reduced to personal entrepreneurship, gig jobs, or even worse, being an online influencer. Don't look at me like that. This is my second job. I'm literally filming this after work. Meanwhile, algorithmically selected media replaces culture by providing an ever more narrow and individualized feed of content tailored specifically to us and independent of any larger cultural context. We become severely atomized, locked deeper into a self-reinforcing cycle of isolation and individualism, and become unfit to integrate back into the social fabric. It is hard to find friends and community today, and it is also hard to become a consistent member of one. In the digital age, social interaction becomes a skill that we do not maintain beyond the required interactions on the job. Dealing with people outside of optimized social media feeds means navigating complex relationships and disagreements, and handling other people's needs in addition to our own, which is easier said than done. So faced with the choice between tending to the needs of others or watching TikTok is more stimulating and also dramatically easier. And I want to be really clear here, lack of time energy is a real factor in the decline of social and political institutions, but so is ideological individualism that penetrates our society. And therefore, now, let's talk about identity politics. Bet you did not expect this turn of events. There are two ways to organize society, based on needs and based on identity. While they are by no means exclusive, most communities will choose one of these as the main ground for their organization. It can be due to exclusion, of course. For example, black churches, queer clubs, and such remain to be strongholds of social movements built on individual identities. But today, identity-centered community building is predominantly based on personal choice to connect with people who are exactly like us, often without a shared overachieving goal or drive as a group. The fact that online spaces make it extremely easy to organize based on shared identity and discourage organizing based on common needs certainly doesn't help. Commerce-driven identities are one example. People unite into fandoms based on their preferred franchise, be it Potterheads, sports cars enthusiasts, or anime fans. Online political organizing based on narrowly defined political tags or parasocial fan bases of YouTubers are another example of identity-centered groups. The issue is that identity-based organizing, even if based in the noblest desires, does not guarantee that the community will actually achieve anything beyond organizing on a small scale of people who are ideologically identical to one another. Worse, identity can be used to form isolationist organizations, such as fascist white male-oriented groups. In the absence of non-commercial and purpose-driven community organizing for young men, such identity-based groups play the role of evil Boy Scouts. And well, you know, take this section as you wish. I'm not telling you this because I believe that protection of individual identity has no value. Rather, I believe that identity politics cannot and do not incorporate into a larger community formation by themselves. Over the last decades, we have seen more emphasis on individual rights and less on common needs. Modern political organizing is often based on who you are and what you believe, and less on what you need and what you can. Identity politics is also perfectly compatible with the atomized and media-infused way of living of today's people, as organizing based on narrow identity replicates our online existence in segregated online echo chambers. Meanwhile, it is also evident that people's needs are growing, and identity politics lack common ideological or practical solution to satisfy those needs. Whether it is environmental security, housing, healthcare, worker protection, or economic security, the needs of regular citizens are not being met across the board. At the same time, mainstream political dialogue, be it from the left, right, or next door upstairs, revolves around individual rights. Since capitalism thrives on ideas of individualism, organizations that are based on identity and lack shared goals can also be integrated into the capitalist system and become displays of organizing without any real action. In his work Surplus Enjoyment, Zizek notes on individualism and its effect on movements and organizations on the left. Atomized social space is much more effective than direct state oppression against radical leftist projects, which rely on social solidarity. In Zizek's view, capitalism's structure is a very effective tool against organizing because it trains our psyche to perceive the world as a structure that ought to cater to our individual interests and identities. All that doesn't directly match our individuality ought to be rejected. So, leftists themselves are indulging in niche identity organizing, protection of individual rights at the expense of community needs, and purity testing of one another instead of collaboration. Zizek also notes that the formation of niche atomized identities and rejection of shared needs trains us to see others from our own class, locality, or other social group as competitors and not as members of the same group with common interests and common needs. His books are also ridiculously difficult to read, so I advise you only consume Zizek in the form of memes. Based on the work of another philosopher, Zupančič, he notes that in contrast with the other modes of production, capitalism does not try to contain its structural instability. Instead, it uses surplus to destabilize other social formations. Today, the attention economy is a great example. The surplus of free and digital entertainment are used to destabilize all forms of social organizing which are not capitalist in nature. Shit time and attention fatigue, media overconsumption, and alienated use of our time are compatible with capitalism, and instead they come with damage to any or all forms of social organizing which are alternative to capitalism. And well, isn't it convenient that by replacing our time energy with shit time, and by filling that shit time with TV, streaming services, and social media entertainment, literally all of our waking hours are directed towards profiteering corporations? We are either working and generating surplus value through work, or we are, let's call it, relaxing in front of the screen and generate profit with our attention time, meaning that all of our functional time gets converted into money for someone else. Exhausted, with no time, desire, or ability to do anything about anything. We are advised to partake in wellness activities, sports, or self-administer medications that will supposedly make our existence more bearable while the world outside is burning to ashes. By the way, modern wellness, sports, and healthy living involve spending money, time, and energy, and more often are individualist forms of consumption in themselves. Despite being good for the body, modern fitness activities are meant to be consumed alone, while you also often paradoxically pretend to be a part of the group, as most sport clubs simultaneously sell us the idea of being fit and the idea of having friends.
We aren't strangers after all.
If you think what I describe in this video seems like a cursed cycle of consumption and atomization, you are right. It is. Our ever-growing screen time, individualization, and exhaustion come at the expense of social capital and the expense of our lives, while also increasing the monetary capital for someone else. Scrolling through social media and consuming online content is legal, cheap, and also profitable for the rich, a new opium for the masses. With no feasible way to improve social and environmental condition, addiction is a great way to deal with deteriorating conditions of life that you can't change. Limbic capitalism describes a system in which corporations and governments stimulate excess consumption of commercial products or experiences by appealing to the addiction mechanisms in our brains. Brain rot and other forms of pathological online media consumption can stimulate the lizard brain and release dopamine in a way that requires no money, doesn't affect the efficiency of your labor when you return to work, and can be perfectly individualized for your personal experiences. Scrolling is more pleasing and convenient than any social activity, and most important, it is profitable for the owners of digital space. Limbic capitalism also highlights an important point about AI-generated content. The goal of AI content is not to replace artists and creators, but to create the type of media that can endlessly and effectively stimulate our brains. Artists that are kicked into unemployment by AI are just collateral damage. AI companies are trying to create a media generator that is as addictive as scrolling through stimulating media. It doesn't matter what the value of AI-generated slop is, as far as it can be used as a mechanism to extract attention from the viewers. In analogy, in his analysis for the spread of home TVs in the 20th century, Günther Anders wrote, "What takes place when the family is watching TV together is only that the members of the family fly towards a realm of unreality at the same time. All of them are together, but they never really share the experience at the point of liftoff, or else they journey towards a world that they actually share with no one, since they do not really participate in it themselves. Or if they do share it in some manner, they only do so with all the millions of soloists of mass consumption, who, just like them, and at the same time as they, stare at their television screens. The family has been restructured into a miniature audience. The living room has been transformed into a miniature movie theater, and the movie theater has become the model of the home." Except today, of course, we have moved further towards automation with individualized media consumption, where there is no culture and no audience. We're in a movie theater watching something, but the movie theater disappears and becomes our bedroom. We don't share any cultural aspects of online media, instead reducing media to pure consumption. Perhaps our eyeballs can also be even relocated into a separate special media consumer dimension by the means of VR technology. And yes, I know I already cited Anders in the last video. It's called recycling, okay? Addiction takes off the edge. It is an adaptive mechanism that plays a role in the domestication of humans from wild monkeys or wild animals into a social creature, a way to medicate ourselves without stirring trouble or causing violence to others. And well, in the times of endless crisis that is streamed directly into our hand devices, addiction makes perfect sense. By developing unhealthy online consumption habits in place of social connections, we are adapting ourselves to death of the community. It makes sense to soothe our brains with funny cat videos. They act like painkillers between the snapshots of the world that is burning to ashes in unfolding wars. We wrap ourselves in online content for all of our available free time, hoping that pictures and sounds will soothe us into a slumber where nothing hurts and the world itself is cured. Bonus points if you are watching this video while trying to get asleep, using YouTube and me as a sort of sedative drug, as sleeping meds on a budget. And look, I am not making this video to shame you for spending too much time on the phone. My phone usage is actually so bad that I have to purposefully use parental control apps on all of my electronic devices. That would be quite ironic and really unfair of me to tell you that you are spending too much time on your phone and that's why the world is on fire. Rather, what I want you to get out of this video is a better understanding of your time. Who uses your time and for what? And perhaps to motivate you to take more control of your own time and start questioning what use of your time would be more aligned with your personal values. Individualism and capitalism convince us that there is a way to buy change through a choice of I don't know, correct packaging or better products or participating in a correct online spaces and consuming the correct type of online media. But this is a lie. Consumption is a sedative drug for the poor. And online media consumption gives us a false hope for a better future without pushing any social or institutional change. We hope that someone else figures it all out, that climate change will be solved by some scientists or politicians or even better AI or, I guess, children. Social Democrats are going to save us from poverty, and CEOs who paid their way into the White House are going to save us from economic collapse. We are trained to hope that someone else will improve our lives for us without our involvement, and we can just continue doing what we already do, going to work, watching TV, and occasionally use progressive hashtags on Twitter. But I want you to understand that this hope is a lie. The death of community, like the atomization that caused it, is a result of multiple historical, cultural, social, technological, and economic factors, which all sounds depressingly complicated. This video is merely a scratch onto the surface of the iceberg of problems that underline the death of social institutions, widespread media overconsumption, and atomization. We could be here for hours and not even cover the half of it, but I value your time and my time, and I am also at war with ultra-long videos. All you need to know is that we are in a cursed circle, which also means that we can start resolving our problems from any side and at any time. In his work Bowling Alone and later work Our Kids, Robert Putnam talks about the decay of community and decline of institutions. And by the way, both are great books to read if you believe that community is dead and want to give yourself a depression. Like Gunther Anders, Robert Putnam outlines the progression from people being participants in the world to people becoming slumbering, sedated audience for our own lives, and eventually to people becoming alienated consumers. They describe a situation where people are completely disinterested in decay of society around them and prefer to watch big, important news from somewhere far, far away or reserve to addictive content that can be stimulating for the brains. Putnam also links the social decline and rise of individualism to the rise of inequality, as concentration on personalization and personal success stories inevitably leads us to abandon the needs of others for the wishes of our own. He talks about regular people losing compassion for others, but also about top corporate managers and billionaires who progressively choose to hoard wealth far beyond their life expectancy, as if St. Peter is now accepting the US dollar. But Robert Putnam also notes that the decline in social engagement is not linked to social media or exhaustion alone. There is a third secret factor. Online media occupies our time, but it doesn't necessarily steal it from us by some magic. Meaning that there is, ironically, an individual component to atomization. We are atomized because we accept the state of post-social existence. Individualism and social engagement have been intertwined throughout history as society moves between different forms of governance, geography, and ideologies. So, just as the rise of social Darwinism characterized the Gilded Age, the modern rise in individualism is accompanied by ideas of neoliberal competition. Both systems believe that people are supposed to compete and fight with each other to achieve happiness and success. The Gilded Age, characterized by sharp individualism and severe economic inequality, brought a wave of crises to the world, but it was followed by active movements and rise of social engagement in 20th century as well. Putnam argues that neoliberalism will eventually be replaced by less individualist ideologies and a stronger social fabric. That is, of course, if we choose to take responsibility away from billionaires and politicians and rebuild the world ourselves. And, you know, I understand that the social organizing and community is not a solution to everything, and that there are plenty of objections and what-if arguments to be made here. But I also understand that it is impossible to do anything productive while sitting alone in the room and replacing social engagement with media overconsumption. Nothing is changing in mine or your community from you watching this video or from me making it. Besides, of course, the slim chance that after watching all of the videos on this channel, and developing a parasocial bond with me like obedient little YouTube slaves, some of my viewers will feel inspired to actually go and do something in real life or maintain their involvement in real life action. I also can assure you that whatever you choose to do in your community will be good enough. Real life is not Twitter, and little things that you choose to do matter plenty. Volunteering once a year in a shelter is already more than what most people do, and it matters more than being the most ideologically pure person who never leaves the house. I don't have ideological or practical solutions to global problems, such as rising risks of war, climate change, or rising hard-right movements. But I have some idea where we can start to address those problems, and that is primarily in our heads and in our direct communities. We can start by advocating for more time energy for working people, and by choosing to use some of our existing time energy in a way that benefits others and not just ourselves. Addressing large social issues is difficult. It's never easy. It requires a lot of effort from a lot of people, but it always starts small. Change always requires work and time. Work and time that will not be spent by anyone but ourselves. And while we are located in a period of history where the social fabric is more fragile than ever, it also means that we should be pushing harder for social engagement and time energy rather than dissociating further from reality. So all I can hope for is that this video motivates you to view your time differently, that it gives you some resistance to the privatization of your time, and that it motivates you to put some of the time energy that you already have into the projects that you think matter for a better world. And, well, other than that, thank you for watching until the end. As always, this channel is sponsored by Athena and all of my lovely patrons, whom I thank for their continued support on this project. And you can always join them by the link in the screen or below the video. Consider subscribing, or don't subscribe. Throw your phone into the trash and build a community of your own. Either one is fine by me.